Hi, everyone. Thanks to the presiders, but thanks for coming after lunch. Hopefully you're more awake than I am from eating. Okay, so in an attempt to not recycle talks, I will be showing you brand new stuff, so stay with me. I stumble through it. So in the world right now, of course, we have increasing population, which means increasing energy demand. And the estimate now is about 520 quadrillion BTUs of energy being consumed. And about 80% of that energy is provided by fossil fuel combustion. And, of course, a huge part of that fossil fuel source is coal. And that number of tons of coal ends up being 7.8 billion tons. And it's not evenly distributed around the world for where this coal is burned. About 47% of that is burned in China. And their energy consumption by type, as you can see here, is 70% coal. So the coal combustion byproduct, of course, comes to mind as an environmental pollutant. And recently, earlier this year, a report came out in BBC letting us know that 1/5 of China's soil is contaminated and considered not good for growing crops. So we are interested in looking at exactly what impact some of this fly ash that's produced from coal combustion can have on soils in China. So zooming into China, we went to Hubei province, to a very polluted and industrial city of Wuhan, where it's considered a tiny city of 4 million people. And there, they have one of the biggest power plants in that region that is 2,400 megawatts, and it powers a majority of that province and part of the province north of it. And this is a picture of it on a clear day. And so we were interested in surveying the land around this power plant and what impact its byproducts coming out of the stack has on the land around it. And using this rough land use map, you can see where the power plant is along the river. You actually have quite a bit of the green, which is agriculture, and then the blue is aquaculture. And right now, aquaculture is booming in China. A lot of land is going toward fisheries and what we call lowland crops that are flooded, such as rice and lotus. So we went to 131 sites during the hottest time of year, and we sampled soils in a whole range of different land uses, mostly trying to split them between upland and lowland. And for the rest of the talk, I'll be saying it that way. Upland being essentially soils that get drained, and then lowland being flooded crops, like I said, soil and rice and fish ponds. So hopefully you can see it. The little school icon is the power plant. And if we then do some simple kriging on the surface soils, total concentration as determined by XRF, you can see that a lot of the higher concentrations tend to be to the northwest and the southwest. In the southwest, if I have a pointer, or not. In the southwest is actually the city south of the river, and then that red part that's to the upper left are actually where a lot of the lowland crops are, including a lot of fish ponds. And then if you look at chromium, it has a similar pattern, and also as represented here as the total concentration in the solid phase determined by XRF. But if we look at the acid extractable arsenic, we can see that proportionately, so this is actually the ratio of arsenic extractable compared to the total when we look at the samples taken from the southeast, which tend to be upland. Proportionately, more of that arsenic is mobilizable, is the way you can look at this map. So though the total arsenic available in the total concentration is higher in the wetland areas, the amount that is extractable and potentially mobilizable is actually coming from the upland, possibly. So to survey this idea more, then we thought to look at whether or not fly ash is actually contributing any of the metals that are in these soils surrounding the power plant. And we used lead isotopes determined by ICP-MS to look at it in a plot like this, where your XY axes are different lead isotope ratios. And in a way of fingerprinting where they might be from, we have kind of a two-component mixing line that you can draw between the fly ash on the lower right and the leaded gasoline signature on the upper left. And all of our soils that we surveyed in this area fall between those two, which means that atmospheric deposition of lead contributes quite a bit of the lead that we find in these ag soils. So if we actually look at the comparison of the trace metal composition between the soil and the fly ash coming out of that 2,400 megawatt power plant, they're actually quite comparable total concentrations. So these are all concentrations taken from XRF. But then if we do the same thing and look at what's potentially mobilizable and the proxy being acid extractable, you see, if we focus on chromium and arsenic, chromium, a lot more of it from the fly ash can be extracted with dilute acid versus from the soil. And then same for arsenic. So though your total concentration of those two metals in your soil and fly ash are comparable, a lot more of it from the fly ash is mobilizable. So if we were to deposit a lot of fly ash onto these crops through more coal combustion, and then also as a way of disposing the fly ash, a lot of people are using it as an amendment, and that's a common way to bring the pH up. They can incorporate a lot of those metals that are then more easily mobilized. So what I'm interested in, or what we were interested in, is looking at the contribution of these byproducts to these soils. And then to top it off, we also have this shift of land use change going on in all of China, and especially in the middle of it. And Hubei is a great place to look at that. So over the few years that we've been going, we constantly see lowland crops such as beans turning into fish ponds. And we found out the reason is because fish ponds are extremely good money makers. Once a year, they gather all the fish, they sell it to the market, and they can make just as much as having a bean farm all year. And when it's frozen, they don't have to work. So it ends up shifting a lot of upland, drier soil to flooded soils. And these are actually pictures from our sampling earlier this year. And you can see the backdrop of the upland crops tend to be development. So there's this amazing juxtaposition between ag and industry everywhere we went in that area. Okay, so just to remind you, we're interested in the area where we kind of see more mobilizable trace metals. And so we went down to the southeast and took some of the upland soil from a bean farm. And then we set up these reactors. And these reactors are I equipped them with Rizons, and we put quartz sand on the bottom, and then on top of that, we put 500 grams of soil from the upland soil site, and to one, we flooded it constantly, and to the other, we let drain, so that the right one that you see here simulates the lowland, and the left one simulates the upland treatment of soil. And then both were periodically watered, and they were watered according to what the farmers told us was the usual regimen of watering that they would do on the fields. And we also used rainwater, and the composition of which was measured over a year at the field site, and we took kind of the average chemical composition. And then the second set of treatments were the same thing, where we had one upland and one lowland treatment. But then to that, we added a massive amount of fly ash. So this would be a massive amount if you're thinking about atmospheric deposition, but it's not a massive amount if you think about how much some people might add to a soil amendment. So it's kind of middle of the road. So to that, afterwards, we sampled the rhizons, and we measured the concentration of the trace metals and nutrients using ICE-PMS. And then we also determined the dissolved organic carbon, which is determined through non-purgeable organic carbon on the TOC. And this is what we get. So usually I have all of these lines pop up one at a time, but I figured I'd throw it all at you at once. So if you look at, let's focus on the left side first, on the lowland crops, we have this pulse of manganese that comes out, and then a fairly constant concentration of iron, which is expected. But if you now look at the arsenic, it's just slowly and constantly coming out. So this is over time. It's not a cumulative concentration. It's just essentially a time series of the arsenic. And it's slowly creeping up, but leveling off. And if you now look at the upland, we have very similar chemistry on arsenic, and the only difference is that we're not having manganese eluted. So the manganese coming out, is the interpretation is that you're hitting that redox threshold and you're getting manganese reduction, and then that's coming out. Whereas in the upland, you're possibly getting enough oxygenation that the manganese is still staying in the solid phase. So if we take that line of arsenic over time, we integrate it, we're essentially over this time period getting 1 to 3 ppb of arsenic released out of that entire 500 grams of soil. And that's only 0.05% of the total arsenic concentration. And yet we're almost reaching pore water leached water concentrations that are reaching the safe drinking water limit. So you don't need much of the arsenic to be mobilized to be able to reach that concentration. And then we took a quick look at chromium, and pretty much none of it is coming out. So then we added the fly ash. So these ones are exactly the same thing you saw before, but with fly ash mixed into it, and the x-axis, or the y-axis, is actually twice as high now. So the arsenic jumped from 10 to 20 ppb. So it's not much of a contribution, but still more. And then lowland and upland are looking very similar. And then if you look at the chromium coming out, the chromium is extremely leachable from the fly ash and jumps up to over 300 ppb pulse and then decreases. So it's essentially desorbing very quickly at the beginning and then decreasing over time. So now the logical thing to do is, okay, well, does lowland and upland really make a difference? And when you look at this graph, the green is the upland, so the drained ones, and the lowland are the blue ones. And essentially, they completely overlap. So the previous hypothesis that you, and kind of the intuitive thinking, is that lowland is more leachable because, or has more metal mobilization, because it's more reduced, and then upland is generally considered the less mobilizing condition, but this shows that they're very similar. So we were trying to figure out why that would be, and we took a quick look of the possible electron donor for the using NPOC to determine dissolved organic carbon, and those are also very, very similar over time. So then the next thing to look at is oxygen penetration. And sure enough, when we looked at oxygen penetration depth, there was only a 1.7 millimeter difference between the two. So when you drain or if you flood, the soils are so clayey there that the water retention is extremely high and your moisture content is very similar in the soil profile whether or not you're flooded. And so then you end up getting very similar metal mobilization profiles. So the next thing to do that is similar, or well, to kind of sum up the difference between our upland and lowland results is that you end up having comparable O2 penetration, and then that ends up having pretty similar metals reactions going on. But then in reality, what you actually have are, say, in aquaculture where you have fish, you probably have a lot more nutrient and carbon deposition. And then when you have upland crops, you actually have a fairly constant source of O2 from root zones. And so then at those top few centimeters, the metal mobilization is probably going to be different if we had these scenarios instead of our just homogenized scenario that we tested. And then in those zones, you'll have variable metal mobilization. So then in this way, depending on how your crops grow and how much carbon you're inputting, then you will see this difference in the metal leaching. So the next step that these reactors are still running, there is someone sampling them now, and the next step is to try to push the soils and see whether or not we get a change in what's coming out when we add carbon, and also letting the oxygen penetration go deeper by changing the texture of our soil. So instead of just taking the upland soil from the lower right of that map, it would be useful to test different land uses, so starting from wetlands and drying them out, and also getting ones from with a different set of particle sizes so that oxygen penetration can be varied. And that's it. Thank you very much for your time. It is, the acid that we use is 0.5 molar nitric acid, yeah, and with Optima so that we could get the lead isotopes. Anything? Thank you.